Well, croeso i Balas Lambeth. Fi yw Llywydd y Cymrydorion, a wy'n falch iawn i weld cymaint o'r Cymrydorion yma heno. Diolch yn fawr iawn i chi am ddod. Dwi'n mynd i weid ychydig eiriau am y medal gyntaf i gyd, ac yna fyddai'n gofyn i'r Istis Sir John Thomas i gyflwyno ei ddweud gair byr am yr archesgob. I'm delighted to see so many of you here this evening. It's a great pleasure to see so many have come to Lambeth this evening for this, what is really a highlight of the year of the Cymrydorion. I'll just say a few words about the medal, first of all. When the Cymrydorion and the Gwynedigion were founded in the 18th century, we couldn't really go in for a great deal of celebration except very informally in pubs. And the Cymrydorion were very well known for reeling home at 2 o'clock in the morning. But there was no medal ceremony because there was no actual word for to celebrate in Welsh. The word dathlu, which is our word to celebrate, was not invented when the Cymrydorion was founded. And it was invented, in fact, by one of our members about 1790, the word dathlu. And I think that's really a very great contribution to Welsh vocabulary. I think we really ought to be very proud of it as Cymrydorion, really. But the Cymrydorion didn't get round to a medal to celebrate Welshness and Welsh achievement until 1882. And it was decided to give the first medal to Gwilym Hiraethog, who had been born in 1802. And he was a giant of the Welsh nonconformist pulpit. And he had this extraordinary idea that if you were in the pulpit, you could be controversial. Most extraordinary and unusual. And he was the creator, in many ways, of Welsh dissenting radicalism. And he wrote a play in 1662 in Welsh, called On This Day, about the difficulties of the Anglican Church in 1662. And I had thought, really, of suggesting to the Council of the Cymrydorion that we reprint this play in order to ruffle the unruffled calm of the Anglican Church. But then we thought the better of it. And he also wrote, Gwilym Hiraethog, this great giant, who was the first recipient of the medal, also wrote a book in English in 1851 called Providence and Prophecy. I don't think it is a bedside reading for the Archbishop of Canterbury, but it ought to be, perhaps. And I think that I don't think that Gwilym Hiraethog would ever have imagined or prophesied that one day one of his successors would be the Archbishop of Canterbury as a recipient of the medal. But I'm sure that if he had prophesied that, he would have regarded the whole thing as the result of divine providence. I'm perfectly certain of that. Well, now, without more ado, I will call upon Lord Justice Sir John Thomas to say a word about the Archbishop before I present him with the medal on behalf of the people of Wales. Lord Justice Sir John Thomas.
Mr. President, Archbishop Rowan, if I might so call him, fellow members of the Cymrydorion, it is really a true and great privilege and honour to be asked to make what is described as the citation on the presentation of the Medal of the Society to Archbishop Rowan. In these days of 24-hour news, of the archbishops having websites, and indeed even of Wikipedia, it might be thought entirely superfluous for me to need to give an oral citation. Everyone has free access to as much information about him as it is possible to imagine. But as so many of you have come, and as I owe to you a responsibility to discharge the rights to which you are entitled for coming this evening, there must be one or two things I might say which might not so readily be found either on the Archbishop's website or Wikipedia, besides covering what one must traditionally do on these occasions. The inscription on this medal reads that it is presented to the Archbishop for his contribution, I Asgoth Hodiaid I Grefyd ac I Cymru, to scholarship, to religion, and to Wales. May I begin with the last? And of course, it is impossible to say anything of a Welshman's contribution to Wales without saying something of where he belongs, that is to say, his family and his origins, which lie in Cwm Tawe. They must also begin in Ystrad Gunlais, which he and I share as the community from which we both come in our origins, being that part which was once the old kingdom of Brychan and therefore has its own distinctive nature and flavour that's different to much of the rest of Cwm Tawe. Until the late 18th century, it was a relatively quiet village. It had then its iron foundry and the discovery of anthracite. And the advent of the industry brought with it, as it did to so many other parts of Wales, families that came from farming. And that part of the Archbishop's family truly came, part of the Archbishop's family came from that origin to Ystrad Gunlais to join other parts. The families were large, and again, like many, they had their own share of the disasters of the industry of Wales of that time, but also many differing occupations from booksellers to farmers. I owe much personally to one of his uncles, popularly known as Will Lem, whose prodigious knowledge of his work, particularly of farm horses and ponies, might be said only to be equaled by one of the many, many subjects on which Archbishop Rowan is so expert. In 1950, when Archbishop Rowan was born, his parents lived in Ystrad Gunlais, and his very early childhood was spent there. So characteristic of his identification with Wales and that small community was when he returned on being invited after his appointment to Canterbury to preside over a charity at the old Miners' Welfare Hall. He didn't address the audience as friends. He addressed them as his teulu, his family. He was christened at one of the many chapels then so numerous and so active in Ystrad Gunlais. But for the good fortune of the Anglican community, a move by his parents first to Cardiff and then back to Cwm Tawe and to Swansea led to his joining the church at Oystermouth. It may, of course, not be traditional to speak on these occasions of his schooling. Perhaps that was because of the days before Wikipedia. But I need to say a word about the time at Dunever. I will not speak of his outstanding academic achievements. I will pass over sport very quickly. Nor will I say anything about his great contribution to drama at the school, which no doubt is being inherited by his family. Nor to his learning Welsh and the literature of Wales, but to recount one small matter that might foreshadow the striking nature of his contribution to scholarship and learning. At the age of 17, he gave a lecture to the school on human rights. It did not merely cover the subject of the rights which were then not widely known nor even understood, but of a much more important question, he raised the issue of the responsibilities which went with them. It is only within the past 2 or 3 years that politicians have caught up with him. As I indicated in my opening sentences, it is rights and responsibilities that he has made a message so central to all our lives. From Dunever, he went to Christ College, Cambridge to read theology, and thence to Wadham, where he took his DPhil in 1975 on the theology of Vladimir Lossky, the distinguished Russian emigre theologian. But it was again back in Cwm Tawe, when staying with a school friend, that he made the decision to go to the Community of the Resurrection at Murfield, and the calling of the church became his vocation. After 2 years at Murfield, he began teaching at Cambridge at Westcote House and was ordained a priest in 1978. And then he had, in 1981, the good fortune of marrying Jane, a distinguished theologian in her own right, and what a pleasure it is to see her here, as well as her young son, Pip. I I must continue with what I'm sure I was told had to be the traditional part of this address by one or two more of the most distinguished academic achievements. He was appointed to lecturer in theology at the university in 1983 and dean and chaplain to Christ College in 1984. And then in 1986, he moved to Oxford on his appointment to the Lady Margaret Professorship of Divinity and Canon Residentiary at Christ Church. In 1990, he was elected as a Fellow of the British Academy. And may I pause, because by then he was only 40. His publications were influential and numerous and covered a broad field of theology. But that alone would be achievement for one man over a lifetime. But his achievement then took a different turn when the Church in Wales had the foresight to elect him the Bishop of Monmouth in 1991. He was, for the Church in Wales at that time, a young bishop. He was to be followed by another youthful bishop, the current Archbishop of Wales, the two of them being viewed by some as either the baby bishops or by others as the enfant terrible of the Church. I leave you to choose which. The fact that they were both from Cuntawe is perhaps a coincidence, or perhaps not. But they were to be joined during his period in Wales by two others from Cuntawe. There must be something special there. As Bishop of Monmouth, he brought his scholarship and learning to his work and made the bishopric and Wales well known throughout the world. But that scholarship and learning were also employed in a very different way to that of the Oxbridge Don. As one of the great demands on a diocesan bishop is to visit parishes and schools of the diocese. He would put over to parishioners profound issues as to religion by asking apparently such simple questions as, to what was Saul converted? Or take a scene familiar to the parishioners of his bishopric to illustrate a profound question, such as contrasting the three castles of the north of the diocese, Skenfith, White Castle, and Grosmont, and the defensive and protective reasons for which the Normans had constructed them, with the open and welcoming arms of the Church. However difficult the issue was, his scholarship enabled him to convey these profound religious messages to all his parishioners, and also to the children of the many of schools in the diocese, which he frequently visited. In 1999, he was elected the Archbishop of Wales, but although the Archbishop for only 3 years, this demanding life continued apace. The visits to parishes and schools. But the duties as Archbishop is expected to perform also then fell into place. And to contrast maybe the way he visited the parishes and schools and put over the message, may I take one illustration, and that is his invitation to give a sermon at Her Majesty's Golden Jubilee service at Bangor Cathedral. His sermon on kith, kin, and king brought together for what I can possibly describe as an eclectic congregation, a message that few who were present will ever forget. The simplicity and the learning were so characteristic and made so relevant to the life of the community in Wales. But two other examples of his time as Archbishop must survive. The establishment of the Archbishop's Funds for Children when the Children's Society withdrew from Wales, and his determination to teach the lessons of leadership as a bishop and archbishop to the wider community of Wales, lessons to which he was eminently qualified to contribute and which is so important to the future development of Wales as a society which is, after a long period without its own recognised national identity, needs to establish. In 2002, he was appointed to the Archbishop of Canterbury, as we all know, and enthroned the following year as the 104th Archbishop. And we can remind ourselves of the numbers on our journey here tonight along these corridors. He has shown in that office the courage and determination in putting before the Church and the public the issues that we face. This is never a popular task, but he has done so guided by that which has so marked his life, his scholarship, his learning, his humanity and deep Christianity. His emphasis on the nature of the community to which we must all aspire can, in my view, only have been so because of his sound grounding in his origins in the communities of Cwm Tawe and in his episcopacy at Monmouth. There is much of which I could speak but have not spoken. His great gift and learning in languages, his poetry, and, of course, I could have said much more of his family. But time does not permit. It must suffice for me to say that there can be few more distinguished Welshmen to whom this society can ever have, or could in the future, have presented its medal. And it is, therefore, an enormous privilege to ask the President to present the medal to Archbishop Rowan.
Ar ran, diolch yn fawr iawn, ar ran pobl Cymru, ar ran Gwerin Cymru, ar ran Gwerin Cwm Tawe hefyd, dwi'n dod o Cwm Tawe fy hunan, ar ran Gwerin Cwm Tawe, ar ran y Genedl Gymreig, dwi'n cyflwyno i chi, Rowan Williams, Medal Cymdeithas y Cymrydorion, oherwydd eich gwychter fel Ysgol Haig, eich cyfraniad i grefydd a'ch cyfraniad i Gymru. Ar ran y Cymrydorion, rwy'n cyflwyno'r medal i chi.
Anwyl gyfeillion. Yn gyntaf, mae rhaid i mi ddweud diolch o galon am yr anrhydedd anisgwyliadwy yr ydych wedi anregu i mi heddiw. Mae hanes ac etifeddiaeth yr anrhydeddus gymdeithas yn gynefin i bob Cymro a Chymraes. Rwy'n falch iawn i fynd yn rhan fach o'r hanes hon, yn olyniaeth enwau mor urddasol. A diolch o galon hefyd i Fanwyl Gyfell a Chyn Gymydog, Sir John Thomas, a mae eiriau caredig ac anhaiddiannol. Sir John Thomas and I share, as you've heard, an origin, literally as neighbours in Ystwyth Gynlais, across the road from one another for a few years, and another neighbourly period in Cambridge when we were undergraduates together. It's a particular personal pleasure to have this connection this evening. Mae mwy nag un hanes i adrodd ynglyn â pherthynas rhwng Cymru a'i heglwys. Heb yr eglwys Anglicanaidd, ni cawsom ein Beibl Cymraeg drwy lyfriau ysgobion Richard Davies a William Morgan. Ond yn aml ac yn flin, oedd yr eglwys Anglicanaidd hefyd yn rhwystyr i urddas y hyder y bobl. Gobeithiaf nawr bod yr eglwys wedi sefydlu tipyn bach a'i gredlythyrau fel ffrind i'r urddas cenedlaethol hwn, ac yn gymar, allwn ni ddweud hyd yn oed yn gymrodor, mewn taith tu'r cenedl, iach ac aeddfed yr ydym ni gyd yn dymuno gweld. I hope that after a rather mixed history of relationships between the church and the nation in Wales, the Anglican Church has finally established its credentials a little bit as a friend to the dignity, the confidence and the hopes of the Welsh nation. The Church and the Welsh nation have not always been comfortable in each other's company. And yet the legacy of churchmen, even Anglican churchmen, in the shaping of Welsh culture has been immense. Not only Bishops Davies and Morgan through their work of biblical translation, but also the Hen Bersoniaid Llangar of the early 19th century, figures like Iain Glangerionydd, Gwallter Mechain, who were so largely responsible for creating many of the societies and institutions that carried the torch for Welsh culture in its full historical variety, through a period when the pincer movement of oppressive Anglicisation and an increasingly narrow interpretation of Protestantism threatened to shrink the Welsh inheritance. I'd like to think that there have been those in our own lifetime, in the last century as well, who have done something of the same for Welsh culture. Eros Bowen, R.S. Thomas, Moelwyn Merchant, and Eirin Talvan, to name only a few of my personal heroes in this context. So I would like to accept this honour tonight on behalf of those Welsh Christians and Welsh Anglicans who have in this and other ways held to and spoken for that depth and range of national inheritance which a proper awareness of the Christian tradition brings. All too often in many nations, this Christian tradition has been seen as somehow relativizing or reducing the authentic voice of a people by introducing a note of moralizing and generalizing. But when it is doing its job, the Christian voice is something that sets free the imagination of a community rather than stifling it. When I was first appointed to this post over 5 years ago, in the days when, as I sometimes say, I still had a life, I tried to define my own priorities and hopes in terms of recapturing the imagination of the culture. And that remains for me near the heart of what Christian witness ought to be. Because the gospel provides so extraordinary, so vast a stage for human beings to walk upon, for all their weakness and absurdity. Beth yw dyn I ti o'i gofio, a'r teulu dynol I ti ofalu amdano? What is man that thou art mindful of him? The Christian vision offers the boldest possible answer to that question in terms of the human destiny for fellowship with the divine. Cyfoeth o gonyant sydd ar gael na'r etifeddiaeth y mae'n ei rhoi chwi ymhlith y saint. The riches of the glory which will be had in the inheritance that God gives to us among the saints. Now, our contemporary problem is not only a loss of nerve about belief in God, it is a loss of nerve about humanity. It is as if, bizarrely, we welcomed the various reductive accounts of who and what we are that our culture offers us, the various determinisms of economics or genetics or the wiring of the brain. Last week's Times Literary Supplement carried an absorbing article by a distinguished medical scientist objecting to the way in which some literary critics wanted to borrow the jargon of neurology in order to explain the impact of poetry. He argued passionately not only that the correlations some claimed to see were in any case scientifically uninteresting, but that the effect of this was to dissolve the particularity of this person's response to these words in this moment. We don't work imaginatively by treating ourselves as abstract beings. We reflect on our relationships, our history, our location. And in absorbing the challenge of the new and creative, we bring out of our psyche something fresh, not a standard and predictable response. And that is a fitting key for understanding the place of faith in culture. Faith does not dissolve the particulars of history and language and imaginative creation, which is why the role of biblical translation in the history of our nation and others is a crucial affirmation of the God-given resource of linguistic diversity among human beings. And it's why figures like the Hen Bersoniaid, whom I mentioned earlier, concern themselves with their people and their history. Faith enters into and enlarges the scope and vision of every people's imagination. And without that presence, something radical is missing. Fel y dywedais am ddechreuad y sylwadau hyn, nid yw'r eglwys wedi bod yn ffrind hollol ffyddlon i'r gweledigaeth hon dros y ganrifoedd yng Nghymru. Ond mae gennym hanes I fod yn falch ohono, gweithio fy nôl. Os bydd y traddodiad Cristionogol yn fedrus I gael cymeriad mewn bywyd creadigol rhyw cenedl, mae rhaid i'r eglwys rhoi ystyriaeth yn fwyaf ofalus a serchog I etifeddiaeth diwylliannol y bobl. The church is to have its proper role in the formation of society and culture. It has to be attentive and loving towards that culture in its particularity. And if the church is indeed capable of listening to and encouraging the most creative voices in its ambience, it will find its role. It will be able to speak of that measureless perspective on human dignity and human destiny which the gospel opens up. It will be an irremovable aspect of the fullness of a community's life. In this generous recognition this evening of the church's role, for I don't deceive myself that this award is made on an individual's merits, I see with gratitude an awareness that our nation still longs for that fullness and that perspective to be offered. I hope and trust that we who represent the community of believers will continue to be faithful to the trust placed in us by our national family. Diolch o galon I chi gyd.
Diolch o galon. Diolch o galon. Thank you very much indeed. Diolch o galon. Nobody has mentioned, although it has been mentioned earlier, that Archbishop Rowan is the 104th successor of St. Augustine of Canterbury. Nobody has actually mentioned the most unfortunate meeting between St. Augustine 1,400 years ago and the Welsh bishops and the representatives of Celtic Christianity at Aust. It was a most unfortunate meeting which ended almost in fisticuffs, and the Welsh refused to accept St. Augustine of Canterbury's advice and command. And for a very long time, you know, it was almost impossible for us Welsh to get to Aust. We could see it in the distance on the other side of the Severn from Monmouthshire. I can remember as a child how difficult it was to get there. But I think it's rather symbolic now that there is not merely one bridge, but there are two bridges connecting the Wales and Aust. And with Archbishop Rowan being the 104th successor of St. Augustine of Canterbury, we have really a form of a third Severn Bridge in the form of Archbishop Rowan. And we've seen it this evening, a perfect embodiment of that, of reconciliation. Diolch yn fawr am gyfeill garwch a chymod rhwng cenhedloedd y mae crefydd yn gallu rhoi y math yna o gymod. We can have reconciliation through love and friendship between nations. So this has been a wonderful meeting, the highlight of the year. We have rarely, if ever, had such a distinguished meeting, and I'm very grateful to you all. Diolch yn fawr iawn I chi gyd, a diolch I chi.